if you wanted to travel in style around the Great Lakes during the 19th and early 20th centuries, you took a steamship. And current state's April Van Buren is here to tell us why. April, I understand these boats are actually called palace steamers?
Yes, and they definitely lived up to that name, too. These were massive boats. They had ballrooms with chandeliers and ornate furnishings. And then, as you would expect, massive decks with people laying in the sunshine. So to learn more about the history of these luxury cruise ships, I talked to Detroit Historical Society curator Joel Stone, and he wrote the book on these. His new book, Floating Palaces of the Great Lakes, profiles the rise and fall of palace steamers on the lakes. Joel told me that the steamships got their start transporting goods and troops around the region during the War of 1812, but they quickly became a thriving industry here in the Midwest.
Probably the biggest thing that really fueled the growth of the industry were the people that were coming in. And it was during this period, following the War of 1812, that the Great Lakes region, both in the United States and in Upper Canada, really kind of exploded. A lot of people that we call Yankee Yorkers, people from the East Coast, were pulling up stakes and moving out to this great new farmland that they were hearing about in the Great Lakes. Wonderful lumbering was going on. And so really there were just lots and lots of people coming in during this period, the period before the American Civil War. And the steamboats really facilitated that to the point where they were the only game in town, really. The railroads didn't come in until just before the Civil War. So they kind of had the business to themselves, and yet the competition among carriers really drove both the prices down and the quality of the vessels up, leading to the first palace steamer era.
Was there a time that was really just the golden era of these passenger ships when, I mean, the name of your book is Floating Palaces of the Great Lakes. When did they reach kind of that golden era where these were really where you wanted to be?
Well, I argue in the book that there were really two golden eras, the first being before the Civil War in what has traditionally been called the palace steamer era. When the boats just, they were the biggest boats in the world. They were some of the fanciest boats in the world. They carried all kinds of people. And, you know, this is, you've got farmers coming in from New York or from Germany, and they're traveling in luxury that usually only royalty gets. So this was arguably the first of the periods. And then the second period started in what's generally known as the gay 90s, really picked up about that time and carried right through the roaring 20s to the Great Depression.
What did these look like on the inside?
Well, when they got to the second era, the first era was very nice and elegant. I mean, they had carpeting and very nicely padded furniture and things that most people weren't used to. But the decorations were relatively plain. In the second era, especially some of the boats that were being produced in Detroit by for the DNC line, the interiors of these boats were akin to what you would see at Versailles. You know, very, very elegant bollards, every surface covered with some kind of fancy ornamentation and mirrors and paintings, and the furniture was beautiful, and just they were spectacular vessels. I should note that this is basically in the public spaces. These boats would have anywhere from 300 to 400 cabins for overnight passengers, and the cabins were relatively spare. Most people spent their time out in the public spaces, in the smoking lounges, in the ladies' lounges, in the main salons, out on the deck watching the shoreline go by. So that's the area that the decorators concentrated on, and they were sumptuous. They were gorgeous.
Were these catering mostly to wealthy clients, or were there immigrants and other people who were utilizing them as well? Was this something that was open, or was it so expensive that really the only people who would be able to afford to ride on these floating palaces would be the upper class?
For the most part, it was open to middle class and upper class, and even some of the lower class. Early on, just about everybody traveled, and you wouldn't get a cabin. You'd spend your time in what they called steerage. You'd basically sleep in the main salon. Later on, as that trend went away, they were affordable for people to take a vacation, so that they were affordable for most working class folks of a moderate means.
I'm talking to Detroit Historical Society curator Joel Stone. His recent book, Floating Palaces of the Great Lakes, recounts the rise and fall of passenger steamships on the Great Lakes. I'm wondering, you know, over the century or so that these boats were really popular, were they a fairly safe way of traveling? Was it a dangerous journey ever to be on these, or was it mostly smooth sailing, pardon the pun?
Well, early on, of course, as they were, the new technology, steam engines were new, the paddle wheel designs were new, some of the hull construction was relatively new. They were kind of pushing the envelope, and there were a lot of accidents. There were a lot of steam engine and boiler explosions. There were no mandatory navigation lights, so there were collisions that caused a lot of issues. Starting in the 1870s, 1880s, that technology was no longer new. It was well understood. And after that, traveling on a steamboat was pretty darn safe.
You do hear a lot about some of the Great Lakes shipwrecks. Were there any notable wrecks during the time of the steamship, or was that really happening before the 19th century with wooden boats and other less technologically advanced ones?
Well, there were several fairly notorious accidents. Probably the Lady Elgin stands out in my mind just because of the loss of life was great. And that was a case of a palace steamer, a pre-Civil War palace steamer, that was built so light that when a schooner, a relatively small lumber schooner, ran into it, it buckled, it sank in a matter of minutes, and it was, you know, that has become one of those wrecks. In fact, the wreck itself is spread out over several miles of the bottom of Lake Michigan, but that doesn't keep people from going after those kinds of things. And there are several. There's some nice wrecks up in the Alpena area, and the Thunder Bay Preserve there. The Puyabic is up there, and a couple of sidewheelers. There's several down along the kind of the lining of the thumb along Lexington and Port Austin there. There's some beautiful wrecks that can be seen. But again, most of those predate 1870. After that, it got a whole lot safer, and especially when radios, ship-to-shore radio came in about 1910. That way, you know, weather information could get passed on. The skippers could talk to each other so they knew where they were, and that improved safety a lot.
I'm wondering, Joel, what was the public's reaction to these boats like?
Well, it changed over time. They were initially the only game in town, and everybody loved them. Later on, when the railroad started offering competition, there was a little bit of a shift. People still love traveling on the boats. It was an adventure. It probably didn't offer the delays. It certainly was more comfortable. You could get up and wander around. Some of these boats were, you know, if you wandered all three or four of the decks, you would have walked a mile so that, you know, you could get out and get some exercise, whereas on a train, you're pretty much, you know, cooped up. And so that they really enjoyed that part of it. After the turn of the century, and especially as the automobile became more popular, there was a real shift away from the steamships. People all of a sudden were freed up to go and see the rest of the country like they couldn't ever have done before, even on a train. You could take your own roads. You could take along all your camping gear and camp out the side of the car. And this really became a fad during the teens and into the 20s. In fact, we've seen pictures of people like Henry Ford and Thomas Edison, Harvey Firestone, out enjoying automobile camping. So there was a real shift away from that. And the advent of the truck and then, of course, the semi-truck really took away the freight that the boats also carried, which really killed their bottom line. That was kind of their bread and butter, and then carrying passengers was the icing on the cake. And when both the passengers and the freight kind of found new ways to travel, it really kind of signaled the decline of the steamships. Most of the boats started going out of business in the teens, starting about 1915. A few survived, and in fact, during the war, World War II really was a boon, particularly for the boats on Lake Michigan and the D&C line that would run up to Mackinac, because people couldn't drive. They couldn't get new tires. They couldn't get gasoline for their cars, and they were working a lot of overtime, particularly in Detroit, so they had a lot of spare money, and they wanted to take a vacation, but they couldn't drive. So then they came back to the steamboats for a relatively short period, from about 1940 to 1950. The boats kind of got their last big hurrah.
Joel Stone is a curator at the Detroit Historical Society. We've been talking about his new book, Floating Palaces of the Great Lakes, which profiles the history of passenger steamships on the lakes. Joel, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me today. It was really fun.
Thank you very much, April.
For Current State, this is April Van Buren.